Welcome to the What Really Happened radio show. Putting America first, second, and third. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
Hello, everyone. There's that familiar music. It's not Mike Rivero today. This is Ryan Dawson. I will be filling in for Mike for the next 3 days. Mr. Rivero is filming for the History Channel, I believe, if my memory serves me right. So I guess he figured, who can talk about politics for 3 hours? Well, I can. Ryan Dawson will do that. So I've subbed before, and it is 4 in the morning right now in Japan. I'll be going until 7 a.m., but as most of you know, if you've seen me on YouTube and the dark circles under my eyes, I don't tend to sleep very much anyway. Anyway, the number to call in if you want to make a comment or ask a question or argue with me, although I prefer not to argue, but I will, is 800-313-9443. And I believe you can also Skype in, especially for you international folks. If you add RBN to your Skype, there is a way to do that. This first segment is only about 9 minutes or so. So before I jump straight into a rant, as I tend to do, I'll tell you what I plan on getting into. But we can change the topic and subject as you like. You can call in and ask about whatever you want. But what I'm planning on getting into is I want to talk about the NSA. I'm talking about Afghanistan, Yemen, Japan, Gaza, Iran, Syria, a bit on North Carolina, Pearl Harbor, because the anniversary is a couple days ago, China, and Iceland, and if there's time, some economic news. So only those things. Not too much for your plate. You can call in. I don't care if it's on topic or not, so long as it's political and it's a real question that you do want to know about, that'll be fine. I don't have any guests today. I'm saving those for future programs. But I thought today I'd leave the phones open and leave it up to you to hear about what you want to hear about. And I'm also going to give you some good news, because too often in independent media or in political news, it's almost entirely negative. But I do have some somewhat good news for you. So first off, I don't have a nice segue for this, but I want to talk about drones. It's something I'm passionate about, or passionate against, I ought to say. And there's been a lot of news recently in drones. I've made anti-drone T-shirts. I don't have any more. I'm not selling them. I'm just saying that that's how the level of passion I have about this, because I just see them as high-tech terrorism. And two countries that often get bombed apart by drones are Pakistan and Yemen. It happens routinely. So I'll give you a story about Yemen probably after the break, because it would be coming up in a minute. But terrible what the United States has been doing, and there's very little coverage about it in independent media, and basically no coverage about it in the corporate media. By corporate media, I'm talking about the ABC, BN, CBS, Fox network. I don't even pluralize that. I just call it the network, because they often have the same stories in the same order with the same catchphrases, because they're being issued government talking points from the same source. It's utterly disgusting. I hope all of you have already turned your TV off. There are some international news outlets that are a bit better, Russia Today, to a degree, Press TV, and of course there's a lot of independent radio shows like this and RBN, and sites like my own, I hope, of course, have been recommended by RBN, where you can get your news. So with the drones, it's a terrible thing. The U.S.'s little Nobel Peace drones, as I like to call them, since the Peace Prize was awarded to Obama, very undeservingly. First, you know why Obama got the Nobel Peace Prize officially? The excuse was that, oh, they were hoping that giving him the prize would get him to change his attitude and actually do something for peace. But the official reason before the rationalization was that he gave this speech in Egypt saying that he was going to get rid of America's nuclear weapons or drastically cut them. And they gave him the prize for that. But all he actually did was play around with the math. What he did was, where there's a bomber or a submarine that had nuclear weapons, he would say if it carried 10 warheads or whatever, he would count that only as one weapon, whereas it's still carrying the same number of warheads it did before. They're just playing around with the numbers. And he said, look, on paper, I reduced the number of nuclear weapons to this amount, but actually there was a slight increase in nuclear weapons. So he doesn't deserve the Nobel Peace Prize. The guy has been a warmonger his entire career, and he was like that in the Senate, too. It's not that he did a 180. It's not that he's a Manchurian candidate. It's that he's always been a warmonger, same as Bush. He's basically had his, George Bush's fourth term here. So the Nobel Peace drones are in Yemen. I call them mechanical terrorists. Shot up a wedding procession and murdered 17 people, and then they injured 10 others. At first, it was 15 who died, and many others were wounded. So of those 10 who were wounded, some of them could still die. And before I get into the rest of the story, I want you to think about this, because often we hear statistics in the news, oh, X number of people got killed over here, over there, so-and-so got his leg blown off, or so-and-so was blinded. You have to really try and put yourself in their shoes. Try to imagine a wedding in the United States getting blown apart from this killer machine in the sky that just came down and blew up a bunch of cars and murdered a bunch of people. Imagine it's your wedding, your daughter's wedding, or one of your relatives. Some of you are already married. Some of you plan to be getting married. And I want you to really think about this. You're not a terrorist or anything. You're just getting married or going to a wedding where someone you know is getting married. And 17 people, probably in your family, are murdered. Just cold-blooded murder, shot out of the sky by a machine, which is unmanned. So even if you shot it down, they'll just build another one. There's nothing you can do about it. This happens all the time. It happened this week in Yemen. It's happened in Pakistan before. They shoot weddings. They shoot funerals. And what kind of reaction do you think that would create? What do you think would happen to all the family members, of the survivors anyway, of those who were slaughtered by a drone? Do you think they're more likely to hate the United States or be indifferent or to love them? They're not killing terrorists. They're creating terrorists, because it is an act of terrorism itself to slaughter innocent people at a wedding. And this is the kind of thing that's happened a lot in the past, but the public this time had massive protests. And during these protests, U.S. drones attacked again and blew up a car and killed some people there. But here's the silver lining, some good news in this sad story, is that finally the Yemeni parliament passed a resolution banning drones in Yemen completely. Now, the official reason, the reason they give, because you always have a public reason and then an actual reason. So this, the face-saving reason that the parliament gave was that the drones violate the sovereignty of Yemeni airspace, which is true, they do. But the obvious actual reason was because they're nothing more than high-tech terrorism. And we'll see how much the U.S. cares to comply with Yemen's laws. I wouldn't hold my breath on it, but the U.S. couldn't even make it a full month out of the six-month interim peace deal with Iran, which was made in Geneva with the other P5 members plus Germany, without violating that agreement by expanding sanctions. Now, that whole thing's not going to work. These kind of agreements are about as trustworthy as a lot of the peace treaties with American Indians. I mean, none of it. It's just paper. I mean, the U.S. makes agreements and breaks them whenever it wants, which is sad. I wish my country didn't do that, but that's what's been happening. But I do feel that it is still good news that the parliament in Yemen has banned drones. Now, the president there, President Hadi, he's a complete puppet. In February of 2012, he was elected, quote-unquote. He wasn't really elected. He was the only name on the ballot. But we'll get into that right after this break. The music's so jolly, I didn't want to talk over it. I just got stuck listening to it. Some of you might like to see, well, I don't know if you'd like to see, but it's worth seeing the video made about Palestine, which features the music, Christmas music. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas, juxtaposition with a bunch of pictures of the Israeli apartheid state basically, you know, butchering people and putting them in checkpoints and stealing land and building colonies for the chosen race of God, self-proclaimed, where God is both a racist and a real estate agent, but I'll be talking about Israel later. We were talking about Yemen banning drones and also about the U.S. breaking its promises, which they haven't broken that one yet, but it's only been a day. They did blow up a car full of people right after a wedding when there were massive protests. It just shows the audacity there. It's almost as if these little drone operators, and that I can think of nothing more cowardly than to sit in a probably some base in Iowa somewhere, like it's a video game, just go around shooting people. And it's almost as if when you look at how they hit processions at weddings and funerals and things like this, they just see a nice line of cars, and they're kind of trying to one-up each other, saying, well, I'll just blow up that whole row of cars and see if I can get my death count up higher than the other guy. No accountability. We never know who's flying these things. There was one drone operator who quit out of, I guess, because his consciousness caught up with him, his conscience. I should say, his little Jiminy Cricket whispered in his ear and said, hey, you know, blowing up little kids is a bad thing. And it often is children as well. Of course, Obama has no problem with murdering American children either. He murdered a 16-year-old American boy as well as his cousin at a barbecue, whose cousin was 15. Just slaughtered him. And teenagers are kids. I've taught teenagers in high school. I mean, they have not been on Earth that long, and it is just disgusting to be slaughtering innocent people with these death machines, and that's what's been going on. We'll see if the promise holds. The big deal, the big news with Iran, of course, we had this meeting in Geneva, the P5 plus one, which I always think is an interesting name. The plus one is Germany, and the five are the nations that count, the ones with big nuclear bombs, China and Russia, of course, the United States, Britain, and France. Excuse me. So the P5 plus one are making this deal. And there was a lot of people in the independent media who got very excited about this because really any deal at all is so rare. They usually, when they try and quote-unquote negotiate with Iran, they just make some impossible demands where Iran's forced to prove a negative, which is logically impossible. It's a fallacy all on its own. Where they say, oh, see, they're not meeting our demands because we put an impossible, unreachable demand on them, thus we have to maintain these sanctions, da, da, da. There's no benefit in these sanctions either. But a deal was struck, and I'll go over what the deal was. But I want to say it's really embarrassing to me how openly the U.S. sacrifices the interests of its own people for the Israeli lobby. And that's exactly what it's about. The sanctions on Iran, the target on Iran, as with dividing Syria and invading Iraq, come from Israeli policy papers and from the Israeli lobby. I should say the Zionist lobby. They all live in Israel. It's not really a location thing. It's an ideological thing. And we saw Israel send Yossi Cohen to meet with the neocon National Security Advisor Susan Rice, not to be confused with Condoleezza Rice, but same level of scum, to make sure that there wouldn't be a step two in the 5 months left in the interim deal with Iran, which is when the interim deal expires. It's going to be in May. It started last month, November 20th through the 22nd. That's when they kind of sealed the deal for the six-month interim plan. And they have 5 months left, and from day one and beforehand, the Israelis have been trying to sabotage it the entire time. So I'll explain what this deal supposedly entailed, but I have a little bit more news on Yemen to cover. On Sunday, there was a Japanese diplomat who, right outside of the embassy, got hit with a pistol, got pulled out of his car, got pistol whipped and stabbed several times. He managed to get his arm up and block some of the knife attacks, but he ended up in the hospital in Sana'a, in the capital. But they did this right next to the embassy. His name was Katsusuke Sotomini, and he lived. But these attacks on foreigners are quite common in Yemen. They killed a German guard in October. I spoke about that on Russia Today. There's a Belarusian in November who got killed, and they've been kidnapping people. They kidnapped a Dutch couple that they just released. And they've got a president who was elected because he was the only name on the ballot who is supported by the U.S. Hillary Clinton actually pointed, this is back when she was Secretary of State still, she was saying that, you know, this was an example of democracy. He was just the vice president at the time of, Yemen's had the civil war between three different factions plus the Saudis on and off since its existence. And they're trying to formulate a new government. And all that happened was the vice president of the president became the president, and he was voted in because nobody could oppose him. They didn't have the opportunity to elect anyone else, but that's the kind of democracies that the U.S. supports. Now, you don't hear them poo-pooing that election like they do other actual democratic elections, but that's how it went. It's not really based on whether or not an election is democratic or not, and not that even when it is that makes that much of a difference when they're beholden to plutocratic interests and it takes millions of dollars to even run in a race. That's another problem. Well, all that matters is whether or not they, you know, they placate to U.S. interests. If whenever it's politically expedient to attack somebody, they will. And whenever they want to support someone, regardless of whether it's a monarchy or a dictatorship, a theocracy or a fledged democracy or an actual one, they're going to support whoever bows down to U.S. interests. And if they can't, they'll replace them. So the U.S. says, the whole excuse for the drones, the U.S. says it's bombing people because they're trying to kill Al-Qaeda. Ooh, Al-Qaeda, the same forces we helped create and support in Afghanistan when they were Ronald Reagan's freedom fighters. And I would say, let's just give them the benefit of the doubt, that let's say there's an Al-Qaeda evil force in Yemen. I would say they're gaining members because of the bombings. The bombing people actually supports Al-Qaeda, because you're not bombing Al-Qaeda, you're bombing people. You're bombing weddings and funerals and shooting kids. And that slaughtering a bunch of people and their family members probably helps Al-Qaeda recruit more members than it loses, if it's losing any at all. A lot of times when they say they did get the number two Al-Qaeda guy, and it's always the number two guy, he ends up alive a few days later. They've killed some. There's one man, Jason Dietz pointed it out. The name escapes me, but he's been supposedly killed 8 times. The guy's got 9 lives, like a cat woman or something. Of course, he doesn't. He was never killed. They just find a name that they know about and say, oh, that's the one we got. Yep. If this guy's not being killed that many times, that means 8 other people were killed. And who were they? A lot of times we don't know. We find out when they do it at a wedding like this. They have some names, but they're just killing people with drones. Total terrorism. We'll be back in a minute. Hello out there in What Really Happened radio listener land. I got a caller coming up, and I'll get to him in a second, but I just want to finish this thought. You know, a lot of people blame these murdering attacks. They say it's blowback, but it's not blowback. Blowback, by definition, is when there's unintended consequences, so it's kind of based on their incompetence. Because of their incompetence going around slaughtering everybody, they end up making more people hate them than they're getting rid of, the sort of kill what they create thing. But these are intended consequences. It's a major cash cow for the military-industrial complex. The U.S. supports these same Wahhabis in multitude of other areas when it's politically expedient to do so. And when doing so, will perpetuate conflict. Perpetual conflict is perpetual profit. It's a giant waste of money. You're just chasing ghosts. Now, while Americans at home are suffering economically, which brings me, I want to talk about economic issue in North Carolina, and have a caller from North Carolina. Scott from North Carolina, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey there. What's on your mind?
Well, here in North Carolina, we have a situation going on where we have a bridge that is 25 years past its lifespan that recently had to be closed down because it's fallen apart, and it was not replaced decades ago because environmental groups keep on suing the Department of Transportation and holding up the process. Our governor and our senators and all of our representatives want to rebuild the bridge. and are very agitated by this, but it's confusing to me when a nonprofit group can sue from out of state the Department of Transportation of North Carolina and keep bridges from being built. There's no access to the island other than this one bridge.
This bridge is going to Cape Hatteras Island. This is the Bonner Bridge, then.
That's the Bonner Bridge. That's right. And there were some women that were pregnant that went into labor, and they couldn't helicopter. There's no hospital on the island. On a good day, they're an hour away from a hospital with the bridge. And to deliver the babies, the Coast Guard had to go and rescue them in a speedboat and take them across the inlet. It's just one example, but no way to live. It's so unnecessary. It's one thing when you have things like Hurricane Sandy and it messes up the road and you've got to wait for it to be repaired, but it's another thing when your passage to the mainland is blocked because of neglect. And
they have the money for the bridge. I mean, I was just talking about drones and slaughtering overseas. They spend these billions of dollars on this stuff, but they won't replace a bridge in North Carolina. Now, apparently the DOT has the money for this, but what environmental group was suing the DOT to prevent a bridge, and why would they do that?
I don't know why they would do it, but it's Defenders of Wildlife, and the one of the board members on Defender of Wildlife, in fact, the only board member from the state of North Carolina, wasn't even aware that he was a plaintiff in the case. And he said that if they didn't drop the lawsuit, that he would resign. So you've got a bunch of guys from different states that are deciding the fate of 5,000 people that live on the island and no longer have access to a hospital. I mean, it's one thing when the tourists can't get there to spend their money and it hurts the economy, but it's another thing when you're talking about the safety of the people who live there. There's no way to get medical care.
I can't imagine if I was having a baby and I would be put in a situation where I had to get on a boat with the Coast Guard to get raced to an ambulance to go to a hospital because there was no longer access to the mainland because the bridge was shut down.
And again,
if it's been 25 years, how could for that long they can't replace this bridge? I mean,
well, every time they try, they get sued. And the last time the environmental groups, or that's what they call themselves, lost the case, but they appealed it. So while it's being held up in court, they can't start to build a new bridge, so they just...
Now that, the Defenders of Wildlife are under the umbrella of the Southern Environmental Law Center down there. That's the Derb Carter guy who's the... He's the director of the Chapel Hill chapter, so I guess that one of them actually lives in the state. But I wouldn't call these people environmentalists. I would call them lawyers, because that's what they really are. They're predatory lawyers with a theme. And unfortunately, whenever a lawyer, there are certain subjects that kind of have an air of impunity. And if you use a word like education or environment, a whole swath of people will support you no matter what you're actually doing, because everyone supports education and everyone supports the environment. Nobody wants to go around just killing animals or something like that. But that's not what they do at all. A lot of these groups are just predatory lawyers. They're getting hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, and if they don't have a case, they'll just make one up. And they pick on these poor areas where maybe it's a small population or only a few thousand people. Because they can, and they get paid a lot of money to do it. But this is criminal beyond just frivolous lawsuits. They're putting people's lives in danger, and they've cut off the access for thousands of people who can't get to the mainland and whose economy have been destroyed because the tourists, too, they've been deprived of a vacation spot, really over nothing. But I would also put some blame on the DOT for you just get sued then. You have to build bridges and roads. I mean, the whole excuse, if there ever was one, for a government to exist at all is, who will build the roads? But they're not even doing that.
Well, it's funny you should bring that up about the environment, because the excuse that the Southern Environmental Law Firm uses is that they support a 17-mile-long bridge instead of a 2-mile one. And the 17-mile-long bridge was shut down because it was harmful to the environment. It also would cost an enormous amount of money, and we'd probably have flying cars by the time it was finished. It'd be the second longest bridge in America, and it's just not cost efficient at all to do that. And the short bridge would only be going where an existing one is. It wouldn't hurt the environment at all.
Why, if the gap that has to be crossed is 2 miles, which is where the existing bridge is, how can they get 15 more miles of bridge? It would be a bridge over land.
They wanted to build a bridge in the Sound parallel to the land, and then let the highway that is on the land go ahead and wash away, which is strange because a lot of the rare birds in that area live in brackish water. And if they allowed that to happen, then the salt water would come in and destroy the habitat. So they're actually anti-environment and anti-people. And I think the only green they care about is in their pocket, because none of it makes any sense. None of it makes any sense. And no matter where you put the blame on the SCLC or on the Department of Transportation or whoever you want to blame for it, one thing is for sure, the people who live there are not to blame for it, and they're the ones who suffer. And
I used to live down there before I came to Japan, and I know one thing the DOT was doing also is that, the government was doing, is dredging sand out from under the bridge, I guess so boats could pass under it. And recently, they had to go dredge sand again to put it back where they took it from. It's cost millions of dollars. And as the old joke goes, government work is like one guy digging a hole and another one filling it back up. But they literally dug a hole and filled it back up again. They removed sand from under this bridge, which caused it to be in such a condition that it's going to fall. They didn't replace the bridge because they've been getting sued, but I don't know if they would do it anyway. And then they pumped the sand back where they took it from. So they paid themselves millions of dollars to dig a hole and fill it back up again. And that's just outrageous for the taxpayers. And a new bridge has to be made, and you can't just abandon people. Bridges and roads are part of the infrastructure and should be paid for by taxes, but they're making it way more expensive than it ought to be by the stupidity of the dredging process and the DOT and the SCLC, and you can add the Park Service and others in that mess as well.
Well, regardless of the dredging that goes on under the bridge, it's 25 years past its lifespan. There's huge chunks of concrete falling off of it. There's a lot of problems with the bridge. It wasn't meant to last for 50 years. It was meant to last for 25, and it's been almost 51. It's the lowest rated bridge in the country for safety. It's a 2 out of 100 in safety. They've had to shut it down many times.
Well, we're coming up to a break. I don't know if you can hold on through the break if you want, or I can talk about this issue, but we got a commercial coming. Hey, welcome back. This is the What Really Happens show. I'm Ryan Dawson. I am subbing for Mr. Mike Rivero. He is filming things for our television program, and he'll be back on the 20th, so I have the power for 3 hours a day for the next 3 days. It is almost 5 a.m. in Japan. The number to call in is 800-313-9443, and if you like to Skype, just use Kelly RBN Live 2. KELLY RBN Live, and then the number 2, and you can Skype in as well. We're talking about the government waste overseas while they neglect people in their own states, such as in the situation in North Carolina where they can't replace a bridge. And Scott is gone, but I have another caller named Scott from Wisconsin. Scott, are you there?
Yeah, how you doing there, brother? I was listening to that situation there, and brother, the thing is you hit it right on the head with the neglect. You know, Michael and me have been talking over the years about how this country's so broke that, except for the wealthy, the rich, You know, we know who they are. But this is a prime example of the neglect, like he was saying. You got a bridge that is so old that it's dangerous. And even in my state here, there's some bridges that are in the danger zone. And I don't know if you caught that TV show a few years back on, I think it was National Geographic, where they went through this country and tested a lot of these bridges, and the number that they come back with was just phenomenal, of needed to be repaired right away. In the situation with the roads. Ryan, I was going down one of our interstates a few years back. You know, when a car, and this is an interstate with chunks of cement, I mean, these were pretty big, up on top of the road. Uh-huh. And I called in to the state transportation. I said, listen, what happens if a guy's on a Harley or a bike that's going down there and hits one of those pieces of cement? He's going to be gone. And the guy was like, really? I didn't even know about that. And it goes back to what you were saying earlier, is it's called prevention, right?
It costs a lot less to prevent something than it is to react to it.
Right. And you go out there, and your guys, they're doing their job, they go out and drive down the road and say, oh, okay, hey, we got some problems here. We got to get this fixed. But it goes back to what I was saying, Ryan. The bottom line is this. They are so worried about this Obama shredder, where I say this Obamacare, yet there you got roads and bridges and other things that have been so neglected. You just pray that nobody's on, like up in Minnesota that one time, on a bridge when it does go down, you know.
Well, that's the thing. Like, prior to the bailouts and prior to all that, you remember Obama had that stimulus package? And like over 75% of that stimulus package was supposed to go into infrastructure for roads and bridges, but I don't know where it went. It just went into administrative pockets is where it went. And they'll contract and pay for money to build a bridge in Iraq. It might not actually be built, but they sometimes do. But they'll appropriate the money for it, but not in your own state where they have slabs of concrete sitting on the road or asphalt or what have you. I know the case in Virginia, where I went to college at William & Mary, all that from Williamsburg over to Hampton on Interstate 64, they've been working on that road since before I was born, and it never seems to be fixed. They bottleneck it in. It's just ridiculous. But it's just a perpetual cash cow. And if you ever seen the government build a road, it's 10 guys watching one guy dig. You know, like...
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? But, you know, it did that next summer, though. My golly, the boys went out there and they were laying the asphalt down. But it goes back, what we were saying is that it's prevention. And right now, you got to wonder how many guys they laid off and who's even going down the roads now to take a look at them or go to the bridges and say, hey, this is a situation where this bridge is dangerous. And then,
well, I'll tell you what
happened
in North Carolina, an extra layer of stupid. What they've done is not only neglected the bridge, but right after the bridge where the highway is, they've had to replace that from storm damage. However, the storm damage is caused from the beach erosion. The beach erosion is caused because the National Park Service went out there and burned all the vegetation that holds the dunes together, and so the water broke through. And the other place broke through was because of government, too. The Navy, Army Corps of Engineers, now listen to this. They took dump trucks full of sand, removed it from the beach to fill in a swamp to build a Coast Guard base, which is no longer there. They abandoned it after they built a bunch of million-dollar houses during the housing bubble and just left it there, never replaced the sand, and lo and behold, that's another place the water broke through and wrecked the road. But the state senator there, this guy named Mark Bassnight, he always hires Bassnight Incorporated, which is his own family's company, to replace the roads. So they have no incentive to prevent the road from being destroyed when they're the ones hiring themselves, often through no-bid contracts, to replace the road. So, of course, they'd rather react than prevent. And you know, you ought to be stabilizing the beaches anyway for 100 other different reasons, and that would cost way less than constantly replacing the road. And nobody would have to die trying to leave or come onto the island. There's only one road. That's it. It's the road. And that's what they're doing. But you've got several government institutions, the National Park Service, you've got the Army Corps of Engineers, plus the Coast Guard, which is the Navy, and then you have the Department of Transportation. And on top of that, you have all these psychotic pseudo-environmental groups, which I believe mm-hmm. work in collusion with these groups. Because you see NGOs all the mm-hmm. time overseas. Mm-hmm. They want to build a pipeline or whatever, and they can't stop it for legit reasons. They say, oh, it's for the squirrels or something. And you know it's not. They don't even damn about the animals. They just want to make money. This island, the same place. They closed the beaches. They closed beaches on an island for a bird. But then they turned around 2 years later and said, if you pay us, the Park Service, for a permit to have access, then you can go on the beach. So how is this magic piece of paper suddenly you're no longer bothering the bird to go on the beach as long as you're giving money to the Park Service? They just mm-hmm. privatized the public beach.
Yeah. Did you catch Ryan? I think it was last week. Michael was saying down in Louisiana, there's like 3 holes of water with an endangered frog. They're the only frog left in the whole world, and yet they're going onto these people's private property saying, "You guys don't own this anymore." And it's just like you said. And I'll get off here and let you go. But you were talking about it earlier with our fearless leader. Oh, yeah, I'm going to put all this money in this pot for roads and bridges. But yet it goes and lines the pockets of the wealthy.
Thanks it was like over $700 billion.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
all it stimulated was bonuses. Yeah,
that ain't pocket change. That ain't pocket change, brother. That's no. major cash.
That's all more than some countries' entire gross national product, domestic product. I mean, that's an insane amount of money, over $500 trillion. And where is it? They spent all these billions in Afghanistan and stuff, too. Does it look like billions of dollars were spent on those roads anywhere?
Yeah.
Of course not.
Exactly. All right,
but
brother,
thank you, brother, for letting me know about it. Was it a road you're talking about in Wisconsin? Oh, we lost him. Well, I assume it was. That's where he was calling from. Wherever you're from, whatever state you're from, if you got a story about your roads or your bridges, because of course we need the government to build the roads, do call in and give me your horror stories. I've heard plenty of them. What's been going on in this area in North Carolina? I mean, I happen to know a lot about it because it's where I used to live, and I know some issues what DuPont was doing in Virginia. A lot of things to do, and these often the environmental groups that you think were so nice when you were a child or something. Oh, they're protecting the owls and the trees and, you know, making sure my water's clean and stuff. No, they don't care about any of that at all. It's like the Patriot Act it says patriot, but it has nothing to do with patriotism. And a lot of bills in Congress that have the label something something environment to it have nothing to do with the environment. Well, we'll be back right after the break. I want to explain the Iran peace deal like I promised I was going to do before I forget to do it. See you in a bit. Now, the host is usually Mike Rivero, but Mike Rivero is filming for a TV program, and so I am filling in for him. I'm Ryan Dawson of ANCReport.com or Rice 2 Cents. You can check out my work over there. And I'm often posting on whatreallyhappened.com. I've known Mike for about 10 or 11 years or so. And I'm very happy and feel fortunate to have the reins for the program. It is a gift to be able to talk to everybody. And I promised before I was talking about government roads and waste that I want to explain what went down with the peace deal with Iran, because I feel that it's been spun heavily in both directions. We had the corporate media acting like it was the worst thing in the world and that they're going to build a nuclear bomb, destroy everybody. And independent media was taking it like it was this major victory. And I do count it as a step in the right direction. But it's not something to get that excited about when you really look at it. The way they had it is basically they're limiting their uranium enrichment to 5%. It takes like 90% to build a bomb. They never went above 20%, which you need for medical isotopes. But the French had a fit about that because they don't want to compete on the market with that, with the Persians. So they said they would do this if the U.S. and the other P5 members in Germany decided they would not create any new sanctions on Iran because they put sanctions on their just about every industry they have, from banking to automobiles and precious metals. And so they did lift a little bit of that, and they are going to allow Iran to sell its petroleum products up to $4.2 billion. And that sounds like a great deal. They limit their uranium, which they were doing anyway, and they get $4.2 billion in sales revenue that they'll be allowed to sell to Europe. The problem is they were also restricted from increasing their production. So you think about it. You're allowed to sell $4.2 billion west to Europe without increasing your production, which means if you're not going to increase your production to sell that much, that's just oil they would have sold to China and sold east anyway, that they can't sell there or that they're going to sell west. But what it does do when you have two buyers is you can get a better deal from both of them, because you can tell China, well, if you're not going to buy, or not just China, but China, Japan, India, the whole Asian area, if you're not going to buy for this price, we'll sell it to the Europeans, at least until we hit our limit of $4.2 billion, and then they're stuck only selling eastward. However, that means they're losing less money than they were before. But when you look at how it was before the sanctions, the numbers from 2011, before all this stuff started, when the Israelis freaked out and implemented this plan, they're still losing about $5 billion a month. It's a six-month interim plan. So in total, they're losing $30 billion, and they're allowed, if they can sell it all, to only get $4.2 back. So you're looking at losing over $25 billion still. Now, for Iran, that's still a win, because at least they're not losing as many tens of billion dollars as they were prior to the deal. But that's really all they're getting out of it, plus supposedly lifting some restrictions on some of their metals and petrochemicals, which is different than oil and gas. However, the U.S. has already broken this agreement. They couldn't even make it 1 month. This agreement was signed November 20th, and it's not even December 20th yet. It's December 17th today, and they already broke the deal a couple of days ago by expanding the sanctions. So they said, this is so Obama-esque, the way they play around with semantics, saying, well, we didn't create new sanctions. We just expanded the original sanctions to encompass more than they did before. Now, that absolutely is creating new sanctions, because you're sanctioning industries who were not sanctioned before. But they say, well, those industries fall within the same category as industries that we were sanctioning, and we just made the circle bigger to incorporate more of them to restriction. Now, this, why would they do that when it's taken over 30 years, really, to make a deal? One reason, because Bibi Netanyahu, the psychopath that runs the ethnic cleansing state in Israel, has been having an absolute conniption fit, and the lobby's been to Capitol Hill beating their war drums. And they figure, well, if we can break our deal and tick off the Iranians, and they react to this, and then we'll have a pretext to break off the rest of the deal. And Iran was very angry in the beginning, but cooler heads prevailed, and they decided that they're not going to cut off talks in May, that the talk will continue, and that the step two will be implemented. Step two has to be better than the first step, obviously. And even John Kerry, who is by no means a good person by any stick you measure, and Obama, same boat, but they're not as bad as some of the other psychos. This is a relative term. I mean, they're all government. But they were saying that they're tired of it, and that they're willing to cut a deal with Iran, a little bit better deal. Because really, the United States doesn't benefit at all from putting sanctions on Iran. Iran's not a threat to the United States. More oil and gas in the world market lowers the price of oil and gas. That's good for consumers all around. Most of the oil and gas that the U.S. gets isn't from the Middle East anyway. They get the majority from Canada and Mexico. Only 1% of oil in the United States is used for electricity. 52% comes from coal, which I think is disgusting because of the environmental impacts of coal. I believe Mike Rivera would advocate thorium, not only to replace uranium, but to replace coal. Coal puts a lot of filthy things in the air and causes asthmas and cancers that are killing thousands or tens of thousands of people, or ups your odds of getting them, you can say, and releases radon, and it's disgusting. And there are technologies out there that are better, and I'll just defer to you because I'm afraid of running out of time today, but on ancreport.com, hit the podcast button and look for the Carl Denninger interview about thorium, and you can learn a lot about thorium. There's also a great TED Talk by Kurt Sorringer, which is TED, if you don't know, just Google up TED Talk, thorium. Thor, just like Marvel Comics, Thor, or the Norse god of thunder, which Thursday is named after, Thor's Day, thorium. And check that out. Watch the TED Talks. There's some YouTube videos and the Carl Denninger reports over on ancreport.com. That is a better alternative to coal. But back to Iran. There's no benefit in the U.S. targeting Iran. We don't really need another war in the Middle East. There was no purpose for the war in Iraq. There was no gain. And people talk about petrodollar, this and that. The oil went to China anyway. A lot of the big oil industries actually opposed the war. The propaganda for those wars started before the euro even existed. So it wasn't about Saddam, you know, buying his oil in euros or anything, because he wasn't and he didn't. That war propaganda started long before 2003. Those were lies made up in the 90s. They tried to kick it off in the first Gulf War, which was also based on lies and was a long time before the EU or the euro existed. It was just a Hill and Knowlton creation with Tom Lantos, where they had the ambassador's daughter or niece get up there and give her babies on incubators speech, which was complete baloney. There were no babies on incubators that ripped out of a neonatal and intensive care unit, purely based on lies. And I'll explain more of that after the break. And we're back. This is the What Really Happened show. I'm Ryan Dawson. I am substituting for Mike Rivera. He is filming a TV program for the History Channel. I believe that's correct. But he's off doing other things, and he will be back in 3 days. So I will be your host for the next hour and then the next 2 days. And I was talking about Iraq. I was talking about the first Gulf War in Iraq, which was also based on deception, as all wars are. And the kind of the weapons of mass destruction that lie at that time was the babies on incubator speech, which was completely fabricated, and still Iraq was invaded and hundreds of thousands of people were killed. And between the two wars, over half a million Iraqis died, the majority of them children, from starvation. And the U.S. already had the oil. It was the oil for food program. They were basically saying, sell your oil and you get to eat. But apparently not enough, because half a million of you still starve to death anyway. They already had control of this. That was not the reason for the second war in Iraq. Was not oil. It was for Israeli interests, same as the first Gulf War. The Israelis in the Defense Department, Israeli partisans, that you can look at each pre-war lie. These are documented. This isn't just speculation or pontification. Each pre-war lie that came out saying that there were chemical weapons under the palaces, or that Saddam Hussein had mobile weapons labs with anthrax, which was erroneously tied to 9/11, by the way. These lies from Judith Miller and Gary Schmidt, who got a Guardian of Zion Award. Miller, who was dating Leibowitz, that's Louis Libby, Cheney's chief of staff, complete Zionist. The lies from the Office of Special Plan about Yellow Cake Uranium, which was from Michael Ledeen, another dual citizen with Israel, and the OSP is run by Douglas Feith, another dual citizen with Israel, and his mentor Richard Pearl, an arms dealer for Israel and a dual citizen with Israel, and then the Secretary for Policy, that was Pearl, and then you had Paul Wolfowitz, who later ends up running the World Bank, another dual citizen with Israel. Then you have Feith, who's partnered with Mark Zell, who's an Israeli settler. These are the guys telling you all of these lies, who work with Chalabi's group, who should be in jail for embezzlement and bank fraud, to basically stovepipe these stuff to these cherry-picked journalists who would write it in the yellow rag called the New York Times, which always lies to sell wars. Judith Miller is the same person that blamed Oklahoma City on Iraq. She blamed the 1993 World Trade Center bombing on Iraq. She blamed 9/11 on Iraq. And, of course, she lied again to get the second war in Iraq. That's what she does. Her whole career has been trying to get a war with Iraq. Again, long before any of the Euro or EU or any of that came into play. Had nothing to do with it. Very little to do with it later. There's never just a single source reason for war. There's always a multitude of factions that come together. But to ignore the Israeli role is extremely foolish. This was Israel's war for Israel's benefit. They went in and liberated the western areas of Iraq first to make sure that Israel wasn't going to be hit with any scuds. Saddam was a threat to their ambitions on colonizing the rest of the West Bank. And then invading Lebanon, which they did, and they still lost because of Hezbollah anyway. But they believed with Saddam out of the way and with the Lebanese military out of the way because of the Hadi scandal that it would just be a one-on-one with Hezbollah and that Israel would crush them. But Israel is not used to fighting people who actually shoot back. They're used to fighting children throwing rocks, so they didn't really know what to do when people had anything remotely equivalent to the equipment that the Israelis get, which they pay for with free forgiven loans, $3 billion a year from the United States. But you've got to look at these lies, and you must see that Iraq was erroneously tied to the September 11th attacks, which was a joint covert operation and a complete inside job. But the myth was that Saddam Hussein and Iraqi senior officials had gone to Prague and met with Mohammed Atta, who's supposedly the lead hijacker of 9/11. And at this meeting, this is something told by James Woolsey to Gary Schmidt, who wrote it in a publication for William Crystal, all these guys, dual citizens with Israel, and racist Jews. They write this up in the Weekly Standard, which was founded by the PNAC founders, the Project for New American Century, Robert Kagan, and William Crystal. So Gary Schmidt writes this bogus piece about this meeting in Prague. And they didn't jump the gun about the anthrax yet, because the anthrax letters were not opened as soon as they were supposed to have been opened. But after they were opened, and I'm talking about September 18th, they had already made this connection to Iraq. A week after 9/11, they were already publicizing this. They waited till the anthrax notes were opened, and after that, because they said they might have anthrax, and as soon as they were opened, lo and behold, the notes said, death to America, death to Israel, P.S. we're evil Muslims. And then, suddenly, this meeting in Prague story was larger than before. It became senior Iraqi officials met in Prague with Mohammed Atta, where they passed him a vial of anthrax. Of course, they didn't. There was no meeting in Prague, and Iraq didn't have anthrax, and neither did Al-Qaeda. And yet, somebody mailed anthrax from Hollywood, Florida, and Waukee, New Jersey, exactly where the hijacker cells were. Someone knew where their hijacker cells were and how to frame them. It might have been the group that was living next door to them, which was the Israeli Mossad, living next door to the hijackers, who in reality were privateers. And I'll explain what a privateer is in a second, but this is ridiculous. They're living next door to these hijackers. Anthrax is sent there. The lies about anthrax came from Israeli security forces who claim to have witnessed the transfer of anthrax at this meeting in Prague that never happened. You cannot witness a transfer of something at a meeting that never took place between two parties that didn't even have anthrax. Furthermore, it was genetically traced back to the U.S.'s own labs. But this was the legal reason for the war in Iraq. They said that Iraq was in violation of a UN resolution, 1441, which said they weren't allowed to possess these kind of chemical weapons such as anthrax. Colin Powell, went to the United Nations and made a speech about anthrax. The notes said, death to America and Israel. This is the story, the Israeli story, this BS about our anthrax that connects Iraq to Al-Qaeda and 9/11. Remember this. He goes to the UN and he actually held up a little vial. It didn't actually have real anthrax in it, but he held up a vial and said, you know, a vial this size could wipe out X number of people. And he gave this speech, which was just written to him, written by Louis Libby, for him to read. It was really just Colin Powell's credibility up there talking, because none of the neocons were believable enough, and they tarnished his reputation forever. And Colin Powell's no saint. He's not somebody that ought to be heroicized. But compared to these just heartless, psychopathic neocons, Colin Powell's a pretty good guy. But he got up there and he talked about the anthrax. And you have to remember, that was the legal reason for the war, the UN resolution. And in his speech, he actually had the cartoon, ridiculous cartoon pictures of these mobile weapon labs that were producing anthrax in Iraq. And these mobile weapon lab stories are coming from the same cabal and published by Judith Miller, Libby's girlfriend, who's writing the speech for Powell about the same anthrax charade. It's just the chutzpah of these people. And they get away with it. And you're distracted by the left saying, oh, it's oil, this. BS. This is Israel's war, and that is why we have a target on Iran. I'll be back in a minute. Hey, this is Ryan Dawson, subbing for Mike Rivero. I'll be here the next 3 days. I got to get better about giving you the number. The number to call in is 800-313-9443. And the Skype is Kelly RBN2. And